That's the Clark Terry Ben Webster Sextet with Lilies of the Field, also called the Amen Song. You may recognize that as a song sung by Sidney Poitier in a starring role in the 1963 film Lilies of the Field. It's the second of two consecutive albums by Terry and Webster. They recorded that together in 1963, titled More and Tread Ye Lightly. Both were very well received and certainly worth a listen. We heard Buddy Lucas open up on harmonica and, of course, Terry wailing away on trumpet. This is Lead Stories. I'm Beatrice Lead with a really bad cold. But, you know, I have had the personal care of a physician this morning who loaded me up with all kinds of stuff. All kinds of natural stuff. And even a friend came by and brought me some ginger, which I currently have in the pocket of my mouth. I'm supposed to chew this so that I wouldn't be coughing crazily throughout this program. So if you could put up with it, I can. Thanks so much. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Monday, January the 5th. And I want to talk about something that caught my attention. It should have caught everybody's attention, actually. And that is, it appears that New York City is being held hostage by an out-of-control police department. The December 20th ambush killings of two police officers in the Bedford-Stuyvesant section of Brooklyn have been feeding the police union's gristmill of grievances with City Hall. Stalled contract negotiations and pay hikes topped the list of a long list of complaints, says Patrolman Benevolent Association President Patrick Lynch, and the deaths of officers Rafael Ramos and Wen Jian Liu, who was buried yesterday, are the battering ram that Lynch is using to force concessions from Mayor Bill de Blasio. Lynch, as you know, is up for re-election as PBA head, but he has unleashed a particularly venomous campaign, and it's not just against de Blasio. Increasingly, police officers are engaging in protest tactics that go way beyond insubordination. Lynch, in fact, is holding New Yorkers hostage with a veritable work stoppage, while the mayor appears to be either unwilling or unable to bring this lynch mob in line. Funny thing, ironically, is that the strong-arm conduct of the PBA, which is not the first time it has done this, and its membership, is proving the validity of many long-held beliefs and criticisms of the New York Police Department. I go back all the way to 1992, when the mayor of the city at the time was David Dinkins. I hate using the first of anything, but he was the first African-American elected to City Hall as mayor. And there was this huge protest. Police officers really went on a rampage, more than 10,000 of them, assembling and circling, or should say encircling, City Hall in a brutish, thuggish demonstration led on by and encouraged by the cheerleader at the time, Rudolph Giuliani. They were very, very much out of control. A city council member, then Una Clark, I remembered talking about being called nigger, and she was not the only one. The racial epithet apparently was used quite liberally that day. Several people reported that, and the then famous columnist Jimmy Breslin, who wrote for the Daily News, recorded that the word was quite often used during the so-called demonstration. And it had to do, of course, with the police discontent over the pace of negotiations with City Hall, union negotiations. But this sea of 10,000 in blue did all kinds of things, including beating up on cars and causing damage, property damage, A couple of them went on top of the cars and were rocking the cars as if to attempt to turn them over. It had not been seen in New York City in a long time, but even David Dinkins, who then appeared before the city council at a special hearing to discuss what had happened, he called it racist. And Dinkins was a man very unwilling to use that word. He was the Obama of his time, unwilling to call it as he saw it, but he was quite emphatic about it and called it a racist demonstration. Since then, Rudolph Giuliani has been rehabilitated in the eyes of the media. He has become a voice of reason, a very, very authoritative figure. And the police conduct since that time, in 1992, has been erased, all but erased, from the memory of the city of New York, because it reflected so poorly on the Patrolmen's Benevolent Association, which was the sponsor of this ugly, ugly incident. And by the way, it wasn't just an incident. It was a direct threat. It was a threatening act. And it was meant to intimidate the mayor of the city of New York. It was supreme disrespect. And it was the kind of declaration of war. The police department decided that it knew better how to run the city, and certainly it knew better than the black man in City Hall. And that was the nature of the relationship between the police department, headed the union also, headed by Phil Caruso, and David Dinkins. I remember reporting on this horrible incident, which was then, the media then took on the job of trying to play it down as, well, you know, a couple of people got out of hand, and yes, they behaved badly, but that's not the police department. That was very much the police department, and New York City saw it, and New York City concluded that they were acting like thugs in blue. Well, all these many years later, we have a repeat. We have Patrick Lynch, who is the head of the PBA, which is the police officers union, basically acting like he's elected to something in New York, that he's an elected official in the city of New York. And he has sent over the bow, he has fired shots over the bow at the elected mayor of the city of New York, and has in so many ways instructed his membership, 35,000, which comprises, as Mayor Bloomberg once reminded the public, that the mayor of the city of New York has the, I believe he said it was the fifth largest army in the world. I don't know about that statistic, but that's what he said. But in any event, what he communicates is correct. This is a paramilitary force, and they are behaving, they are out of control. The city is out of control. And the mayor appears to be unwilling or unable to bring these thugs in line. Now, it's more than just, well, we turning our backs and rear, expressing our First Amendment rights and all this kind of, this is nonsense. It's a paramilitary organization, and it can't pick and choose when it wants to operate like a paramilitary organization and when it wants to operate as a free speech organization. The reason they have uniforms is that because they are a paramilitary organization under the command of a police commissioner who apparently is also being ignored. And he's coddling these people, behaving like thugs, who have said, we don't need to respect the mayor. We don't need to respect anybody. Our concerns trump everybody else's. This is our city. We are in charge. We can do whatever we want to do. And everybody better deal with it. When the police commissioner issues a memo to the department advising that it would not be a good idea to turn their backs against the mayor of the city of New York at, of all places, a funeral, which they had done before with the funeral of Rafael Ramos, and then yesterday again with the funeral of Wenjian Liu. It is disrespectful on so many levels. Number one, here is a funeral for an officer. It's not your time to express your political or personal opinions. And certainly it's not your time to do so in uniform. And certainly it's not your time to do this visibly showing contempt, openly showing contempt for the mayor of the city of New York. What you're saying is you're validating the concerns that everybody has, that you absolutely are the law. You are above the law. You make your own rules. You don't have to obey anybody. You can do what you want under the color of free speech. As if we don't know what the truth is. And the truth is very simple. These folks are out of control. The department is out of control, and it's about time something is done to bring them in line. What could be done? Well, first you have to have a mayor with some spine. He doesn't have any. The first thing that I think the mayor ought to do is suspend dues checkoff privileges. Take the money out of the union. Let them go collect their union dues the old-fashioned way. Go from officer to officer to officer and collect. Dues checkoff is a privilege that unions have as part of the relationship one assumes with the city of New York. But when you are insulting the city of New York, it seems to me you need to forfeit that privilege. And it is through dues checkoff, that is to say, they check off of each officer's salary automatically, union dues are deducted and put into the union's huge fund, which of course amounts to millions and millions and millions of dollars. Why should they enjoy that? Suspend it. Take that privilege away. And hit them in their pockets. So the mayor, if he had any guts, the first thing he would do is do that. Suspend dues checkoff privileges for the PBA and any other organization, including the Sergeants Association, the Detectives Association, whichever union is misbehaving, and they, at this point it seems they all are, in one way or the other, committing these acts of disrespect, not to the mayor alone, but to the city. They're disrespecting the city. They don't deserve these privileges. Take the dues checkoff privileges away immediately. That's what a mayor with some degree of spine would do. The second thing you would do is fire the police commissioner. Because when it is clear that even his own advisories are being ignored, it means that he has a renegade operation on his hands. The city of New York is to be guaranteed safety. And when you have a renegade element running the city, as it clearly is, then basically the inability of the police commissioner to tame these thugs in blue is giving them license to hold the entire city hostage. This is not what voters voted for, a renegade operation doing whatever it is they want to do. And they've already indicated that they have put the city at great risk. Why? Because there is a work stoppage. They're not calling it that, but we are seeing reports from all over the place that the police officers are not doing their jobs. They're doing what they call work to rule, or they basically are not enforcing the laws that they typically enforced. They're allowing crime to continue. They are now a party to the criminal element. How is this possibly tolerated? So, I would, if I were mayor, you cannot tolerate this kind of nonsense and act as if, well, you know, it's just we just are having a bad time really seeing eye to eye. You know, grow up and see the situation for what it is and act like a mayor. These are thugs. This is thuggish behavior. And it is a shakedown, and it is holding the entire city hostage. And from City Hall, all we get is pablum. Well, let's sit down. But when the police commissioner is being ignored, it means he can't run his department, which is what he's getting hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to do. So he has to be fired. In any corporation, and the city of New York is a corporation, the division heads are directly responsible for their sections. When your section is not producing, or when your section is out of order, whoever is at the helm has got to go. There's more than enough evidence to suggest that William Bratton is not in charge of this police department. He has a renegade police department and is incapable of bringing people in line. What does that mean? It means he's ineffective. And therefore, he should go. By this time, we should have seen the city council go into full mode as the legislative body for the city of New York. But they too have punked out. There should have been a commission of inquiry specifically, of course, to evaluate the performance of the police commissioner and with the eye of getting rid of him. This should not be a secret. He ought to go. And if the mayor himself, because the mayor seems to have placed himself in a subordinate position to the police commissioner, he is having William Bratton call the shots. And he's standing there like a very tall statue doing nothing. Meanwhile, the people of the city of New York are the hostages here. And the union is acting like a bunch of renegades and rogues and thugs. This is not acceptable on any level. It would not have been tolerated were it in the private sector. The next thing that I would do is somebody's got to discipline these errant cops. You can't tell me that it is okay in uniform. I mean, really think about that. Do you think that any soldier in the army would be allowed to disgrace his uniform with any of these kinds of acts that they're getting away with? These guys in blue, when your general issues an order, it is treated like a suggestion, and it is up to you whether you wish to obey or not obey. And on average, these folks are earning almost $70,000 a year of taxpayer money, and they are deciding that it is about them and not about the city. And they're getting away with it? Then the question should be very clear. If you don't want to be on the force, get out. If it is intolerable for you to obey orders and intolerable for you to do your job, get out. And finally, we may just see the emergence of a police force that looks like the city of New York. Which brings me to the other point. I think the black and Latino officers ought to leave the union. they ought to get out of it. We heard from them on this program. We heard representatives of police unions and who have been on the force, African-American and Latino, talk about the travails of police officers of color within the ranks of the police department and even at the executive level within the police department. Maybe it's time to winnow out the ranks, and maybe it's time for them to go and form their own unions. If there's going to be a situation where the conduct of renegade cops, disrespectful cops, insubordinate cops is painting them with a bad brush, then it's time for them to consider breaking with the PBA. Apply for your own dues, check off privileges, and form your own union. That's what I think we should do. We have a clear lack of leadership here at the local level, and even in this matter, it is evidencing itself. I've called attention to it with respect to the police brutality cases that the city council has just conveniently avoided doing anything about. But here we have in the open police officers reviving the thuggish behavior of 1992. And they apparently are doing nothing. Everybody is just terrified of the police. Well, then we ought to admit, maybe this is a terroristic act. Because if it is not producing a healthy response, it must mean that people are terrorized into submission. But it seems to me that the members of the city council ought to have convened by now a commission of inquiry and ought to be compelling some answers here as to why the city of New York is in the hands right now of a renegade police force. That's what we've got. That's what this is. And it's the second time in recent years that it has happened. You know, I remarked about the funeral of Rafael Ramos. And on the stage, it was like South Africa. There was no way, looking at all these officials from the police department attending his funeral, you would never guess that this is a well-integrated police force. It was a sea of white. And men, white men, and they're earning big bucks. In fact, I saw a story in the New York Post about one officer whose salary is $90,000, earning $172,579 in overtime. That's how lucrative this job is as a police officer. A job, one of the few jobs you could get with just a high school diploma. And as we can see, it is not democratically available to everybody. Perhaps this is the time to find out how many people in the city of New York who are civic-minded and concerned about their city and would like to join the police force and who have a high school diploma, and who would like to earn on an average $60,000 or $70,000 a year, how many of them would like to join the force? Get into aggressive recruitment, and the flip side of it, get into aggressive expulsion of officers behaving this way. This can't possibly be right. And this is not about, you know, union negotiations and all of that. I used to be a union rep. I understand union negotiations and workers' rights and benefits and privileges. But this is an act of intimidation. This is the police saying, we are above all other citizens in the city. We are a special group. We are the law. We can do what we want. And nobody, not the mayor, not even our boss, the direct boss, the police commissioner, has any control over us. And this must raise a question. What, therefore, is the nature of the police force? Is it a situation where the union head calls the shots? If Pat Lynch wakes up tomorrow and says he thinks it's a good idea that police officers ought to smash windows all along Fifth Avenue, is that any different from the leader of any other gang who decides what ought to be done and issues orders to the minions? And New York City is tolerating this? And as we speak, crime, especially in communities where they historically have been misbehaving. You know, I once asked a police commissioner, and he got very angry with me. I asked him, what is a known crime location? What is that? A known drug location? All these crimes that are occurring in known drug locations, what are those? And how come known drug locations are never on Fifth Avenue or Park Avenue? They're never in the suburbs. Black and Latino communities almost exclusively have a monopoly on known drug locations. And the obvious question is, if they are known, why are they still there? It means that the police have a long history of ignoring these things in certain communities, in Black and Latino communities specifically. And that speaks also to the instructions that they get at the precinct level as to how to behave in a community. These police officers are behaving this way in a larger sense, but this is symptomatic of the kind of renegade conduct that is routine in Black and Latino communities where the police are out of control. We saw that in the Garner case. The officer Daniel Pantaleo, who applied the chokehold, was a man who had already been sued four times for false arrest of Black men and who should have been off the force a long time ago. How many more Pantaleos are there? And what is the mentality of a precinct where you have 10 or 20 Pantaleos? Who is checking that behavior? So, to review, the mayor ought to suspend dues checkoff privileges immediately to the police benevolence, the Patrolmen's Benevolence Association. By the way, it does warrant the change of a name, don't you think? It's still saying women don't count. The Patrolmen's Benevolent Association. And I did remark on the irony that here is Officer Rafael Ramos being buried, his casket draped with the police flag, which is green and white. And when I looked it up, I wanted to find out, why is the police department's flag green? The explanation was that green is a color of sentimentality within the department. That's how they explained it. Not that it is because the Irish dominated the police force, and therefore the green represents the Irish. And whether you're Latino or Asian, you're green. Because that's who controls the department. And we know how New York City is organized. At one point, the sanitation department was the purview, the dominant control of the sanitation department was Italian. The dominant control of the Board of Education was Jewish. This is how the city went. This is how it was run. By all these racial codas that they decide that these things don't apply. That's not true. That's a figment of your imagination. And here we have it in the open. Pat Lynch is the guy who's stepping in for the green of the flag of the police department. So New York City has a job on its hands, and citizens need to do something about it, because what it is saying is that New York City, unless they do anything about it, New York City, it is to be understood, is being run by a renegade paramilitary force that not even the commissioner nor the mayor can control. What are your thoughts? We'll take this break. Come back to your thoughts at 888-874-4888. You're listening to PRN.FM, and you're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. Your calls. We're talking about the city of New York under what seems to be a hostage situation involving the police department. And nobody seems to be able to tame these folks and bring them in line or make a definitive decision as to who's boss here in this town. Joel, you're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm good. So I agree with everything you had to say. I don't see how anybody couldn't. And I watched that spectacle myself. And I really think, Eutrice, that in some ways it was a kind of fascistic spectacle. Because, you know, as you mentioned, already heavily militarized, already implicated in wanton killings of blacks in this city that go back really decades. The police, and many of them, of course, weren't even from New York, coming from far and wide, used the funeral to demonstrate their demand for acting with impunity, and use the funeral to, as you say, show their contempt for authority to rein them in. So, as far as I'm concerned, the funeral symbolized the police as enemies of the rule of law, unable and unwilling to bear scrutiny for lawless acts that these people have committed on an ongoing nature, but brought to national attention through a sudden condensation of events over the last several months. And you're right, we stand in fear of our own public servants, just as we do towards the CIA on the international plane, because what the police represent now is a militarization of American life, which internalizes collectively the repression the country as a nation presents to and imposes on the world and internally demands of itself, lest its global or its domestic courts, or even if its local power, be questioned. So turning backs is a gesture of contempt, and it's the surface of a culture, here a police culture, that rests on wider authoritarian foundations. And the gesture in Queens was meant to say to de Blasio and beyond de Blasio, to all liberal do-gooders, get out of our way. It is we who are the vanguard of a new America, a kind of fascistic America, proudly defiant of our civil authority, just as our brothers in the CIA are waging the same battle. And we're mutually reinforcing one another to bring in, you know, into our respective spheres of activity in society, the obedience to a vision of order that is to be sanitized and absolute in its scope.
Well, thank you. I don't disagree with anything you have said. I just feel so strongly about this, but I have to ask, what do you think is the reason that de Blasio is not being more definitive in his actions?
Well, you know, it's difficult to get into somebody's mind, and you know, one can't really do a kind of psychological analysis of why he's doing what he's doing. But I think when you think of who he is, he comes out of the Clinton farm. He has some decent ideas, but he's still a establishment politician. And, you know, as I mentioned the other day when I was talking about the decline of liberalism in our society, so many of these liberals now weigh their careerist aspirations against what their principles act should be. You know what I mean? And I think he's made a decision that he doesn't want to have this fight right now. After all, he has the most prestigious municipal job in the country, and it's usually a stepping stone to for higher aspirations. So I think that what he's doing is he's tempering his principles because he has his own personal aspirations, political aspirations. I mean, he should be doing exactly what you said. He shouldn't take any of this crap. He's the mayor of the city, and they work. They're part of the executive. Mm-hmm. So I think that's
Thank
what's
you.
Going on. But in the meantime, yeah, okay, bye.
No, I've finished your sentence. Oh, he's gone. All right. 888-874-4888. What do you think about the situation in the city of New York, where the police seem to be out of control, listening to nobody, and the people who can do something about it seem unwilling or unable to do it? Sarah, you're on the air.
Oh, greetings to you, Utrecht.
Thank you, and to you too.
Oh, yes, Utrecht. I sent you an email in regards to a potential guest for you to get on the show. So once you're feeling better, you could check it over and you can see if that would be a good fit for you. But in regards to this situation in New York, Utrecht, I mentioned that to you all last week when we last spoke, that this is a case of insubordination bordering on almost, treason, as you said, in the military. And coming from my background in the military, you know, we do something like this, you're looking at being court-martialed. You're looking at being arrested and thrown in the brig. You're going to lose some pay. You're going to get some time off without pay. And, of course, you're going to be on the street looking for a new job. Because if these officers, as you said, you know, this is all about, once again, making themselves be the victim. They are the victimizer. But they want to now put themselves in the role of being the victim, that they are being, it's like a child. You chastise a child for being disrespectful and disorderly, and they're going to sulk and they're going to take it to another level. But with these officers, they're taking it to a whole new level as usual to say that, okay, that they're being victimized. If the shoe don't fit you, then you don't have to put it on. If you were not the ones that when the mayor made his speech about the thuggishness and the, what's going on in the city, if you are not one of those cops, let it fly. And that's what you need to do. Do your job and let it fly. But they all, as the saying, only a hit dog hollers. If you throw a rock and whichever one get hit and the one screaming, that's the one you hit. So all of them must know that they are guilty of the infractions that the mayor talked about. Because they're all out here, they're turning their backs, they're being disrespectful to him, and as you said, he does not have the gumption. It's either he is scared or he's going along with a play in order to let the public galvanize and the public come behind him and push him along while the focus get taken off of what they're doing out here to the citizens, black people in particular, and it gets focused now on the police and the poor, oh, this poor mayor, he's being victimized and blah, blah, blah. Now it's totally being shifted out into that column. And he needs to do what the people are putting him there for, because as you said, he is their boss. The buck stops with him. He is the top of that chain. You know, Bratton reports to him. And all of these other, Pat Lynch and all of them, they all report to Bratton. Now if he should start, if he wants to start cleaning it from the top, Bratton needs to go. Pat Lynch needs to go. You're going to tell him, okay, if y'all don't shut this down by tomorrow, what you can do is turn in your gun and badge, and you need to find somewhere else to look for a new job. Because that's what he needs to tell Pat Lynch. You need to go out there and tell these officers, if they don't get back on the job and pay what and do the job that the citizens are paying them to do, they need to all need to turn in their badge, and they have until 6 p.m. tomorrow afternoon to get this stuff on the road. Because if tomorrow at 6:31 and they're still out there acting a fool, I'm going to start setting something down to personnel to say who is going to be let go.
Well, thank you for your opinion. Thank you, Sarah, for your call. From New Jersey, Khalil, you're on the air.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm fighting a cold, but I'm good.
Okay, better, but yeah, I know it's tough. I'm going to try to be brief here. You know, you are doing a hell of a job. You're doing the people's work because you tell the truth. I'm a little off topic, but I'm going to get right on topic. But really, there are a few people out here who are telling the truth who are black, all right, about the president and everything else. But let's focus on this police situation. What type of mindset are these folks? They need to actually clean out that whole department, right? Because I used to live in New York in the 80s when it was before it got cleaned up. You know, it was a little rough around the edges, sure. But after 9/11, it became a police state. I mean, they went overboard. And people who have not visited, they don't understand. In neighborhoods, you can't even sit outside of your apartment. You cannot do anything. You can't even function as a normal human being on the street as a black person, a black man. And I don't think a lot of people understand that. So we have, like you said, they're thuggish. They are thuggish because they act with impunity. They know they have no oversight. And look, why is it not out there, that recording that we've all heard of that lieutenant who said, yeah, I want you to stop as many black and browns as you can today. Do you remember that recording I'm talking about? This was in the past year and a half.
Yes.
That's big. See, that may not be big to some people, but what happens when I go visit my friends in Brooklyn? I'm always looking over my back. You know, this is nonsense. And you got these jokers walking around with less education than I do. They don't have sociology. They don't understand criminology. The average white person that listens to crime statistics doesn't understand that policing is different in black neighborhoods than it is in the suburbs. You know, there's a reason that more black people are locked up because there's more police.
Why do you think, Khalil, that there is a reluctance to fully engage with this problem and put it to bed one way or the other by the city, by the mayor?
Well, And I'm very sorry those officers lost their life, but I'm not surprised. See, I knew that was going to happen months ago. It was just a matter of time because we are weary, and some of us aren't wrapped too tight. Some people have mental issues, and people are tired. This has been going on for a very long time. And when you have videotape of Eric Garner saying, I can't breathe, then you have Witness 40 over there in St. Louis, which has a history. People don't even understand history. A history of terrible, terrible racial discrimination. I mean, that was a few miles from where the Dred Scott decision was made, okay? And Witness 40 lied, and she admitted she lied. And no one's, and like you said, Sharpton, if he was serious, if Sharpton was serious, he would file papers, okay? That DA over there in Missouri, we've reversed. We're back to 1952 in terms of institutional racism. This whole thing needs to be scrapped. And the only hero I see out of that Eric Garner situation, if I'm correct, it seems like that New York Attorney General said, well, maybe we have to revisit how we have district attorneys dealing with cases that involve law enforcement. That's the only positive I see out of that case. And that's what we really have to focus on, I think, in addition to getting these jokers out. Because I'm tired of hearing these people say, well, I put my life on the line every day. Guess what? When I walk on the street every day, I got to worry about your dumb behind looking at me. How about that? You know, they have our future in our hands. And don't bring up no black-on-black crime. That's nonsense because We get prosecuted. Police don't get prosecuted for killing us.
Thank you very much, Khalil, for your call today. Thank you.
Yes.
This situation really needs to be taken care of, if only to set a precedent, because, I mean, one would have thought that it would have happened back in 1992 with David Dinkins, but David Dinkins himself kind of hid behind the city council, didn't come out and say, listen, I am the mayor of the city of New York, I am an elected person, and I do have the power and authority to fix this. And here is how I'm going to fix this. Well, we have time for one more call. Of course. Allie, you're on the air. How are you?
Hi, you trees. How are you doing?
I'm fighting a cold, but I'm fighting.
Yeah, I'm getting one myself. But I just wanted to say this. We have to understand that the police department in New York City is above the law. They were ordered to stop a stop and frisk by the court, and they still didn't stop and frisk. Even up today, they still doing it. It's unconstitutional. And what did they do? They took the woman judge, and you have to see the headline, what they did to that woman. So we should not be surprised what they're doing to the mayor, because they have control over the city. Completely control. On Friday, we were in front of the News Corp. The News Corp is owned by Rupert Murdoch. And we are here, one of my group that I belong to, we're trying to boycott the New York Post, one of the most racist paper in the city. And what the cops did to us, we did a die-in. They put their barricade in front of the building. And if you look at the cops, they are on the side protecting that building, and we were on the other side. And what did they tell us? Because we wanted to do a die-in inside the area, which is like Zuccotti, is public-private property, meaning that we have access to. They told us, like we are stupid, that it wasn't them who put the barricade in front of the building. When those barricades, they say New York City Police Department. And when we were leaving, who are the people that were removing the barricades? The police department. And what I'm trying to say, if anybody comes to New York City, the way, if they're disrespecting the mayor, what people of color here in New York City, what can we expect from them? They have done that to us all the time. The disrespect that they're doing to the mayor is what we have experienced in this city. So it's not a surprise for us here. It's not a surprise.
But Allie, why is the mayor not responding appropriately?
Because the mayor, if you notice about his election, this guy was 8% before. In less than a month, this guy almost won an election. So he has been put there. And this was by either the Democratic Party and people above him who telling him, we put you in there. Remember, they put these people out there for us to vote for them. It's not because we are put in there ourselves. That's what he was picked to run the city. He was behind. He only had 8% approval in the city, and then this man won the election. It's unheard of. So it's people above him, and who is above? People probably in the police department. If you take a look when I go to this protest, who are the white shirt and who are the police department represent that they have suit? All of them are white. 99% of them are white male. White male only. And these are the people that are controlling him and controlling the city. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your call. Dina from Brooklyn, you have a fast call to make.
This is Vera.
Okay. Dira?
Vera.
Oh, Vera. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
I want to try to answer that question about the mayor. And in my thinking, it's that what seemed to have upset the police so badly was when he had made the remark about having to tell his son about how he should behave when confronted with the police, and I think that enraged them. because it was like he was taking the turning his back on his own people and taking the side of black folks. And so I'm thinking that either he hasn't wanted to be considered a lover, and so therefore they have turned their back on him, saying that you're with them, so you can't be with us. And I'm feeling that this is the mentality that they've always had about people who are white who have tried to defend or stand up for people of color. That if you're with them, then you can't be with us.
Thank you. That's very much. Opinion. A very, very, very profound observation. Thank you, Vera, for your call. And that brings us to the end of our program today. I hope it excites some kind of activity in City Hall where people are saying, Mr. Mayor, act like you are in charge. I mean, you put there, you the mayor of the city of New York, do something and bring these folks in line. The city cannot continue to operate this way. Well, we have four more days to go before we get together at Convent Avenue Baptist Church for this fantastic, magnificent thank you to a master teacher. Isn't it great that people get together to honor a teacher? And he was not just a teacher, he was a master teacher, Dr. John Henrik Clark. And this is his centennial year, and we are kicking it off in fine style. There'll be a lot of traditional drumming, lots of folks talking. Many of them are well-known scholars. We have people from all circles of life, young and old, women and men, people who are very much familiar with the writings of Dr. John Henrik Clark, who played a seminal role in this country of educating people who had been divested of their history. And so we are coming together at 7 o'clock on January 9th, that's Friday, to say thank you, Dr. Clark, and to shower him with love and affection, and most of all with gratitude for the work he had done before he left this earth. But I know he'll be smiling, he'll be happy that we would be gathering in his name on Friday, 7 o'clock at Convent Avenue Baptist Church. And you'll also get some good old gospel music to keep you going. It's a wonderful, wonderful event. But it is meant to have us refocus. Remember, I said this year is a purposeful year, a transformative year, to get us to focus on what is important and to focus and thank people who have been important in elevating our collective consciousness. So I look forward to seeing you, many of you. I've known your voices, but it would be good to see your voice on Friday at 7 o'clock, Convent Avenue Baptist Church, which is at 145th Street and Convent Avenue. I thank you for listening today. I thank you for the pleasure and privilege, the great privilege of your company. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.